Training camp is underway. DeAndre Hopkins is under contract. And most Tennessee Titans fans are over the moon with optimism, which is the norm at this time of year. Everything feels possible in the opening days of training camp. And that is where we are as we come into this episode of the Believe in Titans podcast. As always, I am David Beauclair, joined by former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing good, David. How you doing?
Doing outstanding. And John Glennon of the Nashville Post, how are you, my friend?
I am doing well. I hope you guys are too.
Doing great. And before we dive into this thing, we do need to update you on a couple of housekeeping items, I guess we'll say. Training camp did start without cornerback Caleb Farley and offensive lineman Dylan Radins on the practice field. Both are on the physically unable to perform list. Defensive back Josh Thompson is on the non-football injury list, also not practicing. As we talked about here last week, the Titans worked out George Fant over the weekend, as well as another veteran tackle, Chris Hubbard. Neither one was signed, but just ahead of camp, Tennessee did add veteran safety A.J. Moore, a guy they had on the team last year that they had high hopes for, particularly as a special teamer and maybe some specialty roles on defense. He is back, and defensive tackle Curtis Brooks was waived to make room for him. So, I mean, let's get into this. DeAndre Hopkins signed his contract, met with the media, talked about his relationships with Mike Vrabel and Derrick Henry, but also talked about, in a way, I guess, how impressed he was with the end of the Titans season and the fact that they were competitive in a couple of games with a quarterback they pulled off the street to play those games. John, I'll start with you. I guess what stood out the most to you from Hopkins' comments?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we expected some of the reasons that he signed with the Titans certainly to be the relationships he had. You know, Mike Vrabel, Tim Kelly, you know, Charles London as well is now the Titans passing game coordinator, all go back to Houston together. And then, you know, he knows Derrick Henry well over the years. They've worked out together. They've become pals. Made sense that relationship, you know, that gives, you know, DeAndre Hopkins an excellent running attack to kind of balance the passing game as well. And you know, hopefully open up more opportunities for him. But, you know, as you say, I think the most surprising thing to me, the one that kind of caught my eye, was that DeAndre Hopkins talking about how the Titans offense, and especially down the stretch, and he mentioned, you know, kind of some of the Josh Dobbs games as well, you know, talking about how it sort of, he said, it woke my eyes up to how these guys play, the pace they play, and how competitive they can be with the right people on the team. And he thought that, oh, they're only a couple pieces away from where they want to be. And that's great if you're the Titans. You know, obviously he signed here and he certainly believes it, but I just kind of was left a little bit scratching my head. You know, we all saw the Titans struggle down the stretch. So many injuries, you know, we're not playing well in general. And the offense sputtered all year, you know, wound up with, you know, 30th in yardage, 30th in the passing game, 28th in average points, just like 17.5 a game. So I kind of wonder a little bit, where is DeAndre Hopkins coming from there? Again, hey, it's all well and good if you're the Titans or a Titans fan. Hey, he buys into what the Titans had in terms of potential. And maybe DeAndre Hopkins is also saying, I certainly am a huge piece of what they were missing and that I can make a significant difference in this offense. And that's certainly believable based on his track record too. But I left being a little surprised again. This is a 31-year-old guy. who has only played in six playoff games in his career, and maybe the initial thought was that, maybe he's looking for a Super Bowl contender. Instead, he goes to this Titans offense that certainly was struggling, but that DeAndre Hopkins sees some good things there. He sees the seeds, certainly of of an offense can make a big turnaround, apparently.
And in his time with Houston, it's not like he played with terrible running backs, right? I mean, he was that team's leading receiver 6 years in a row. One of those years they had sort of a disastrous running game, but among the Texans' leading rushers during that time were Arian Foster, Lamar Miller, Carlos Hyde. Those are good backs. They're not Derrick Henry though, and I would assume that there is something very appealing for a guy in his position, and as we've talked about here, what it's going to do to defenses, and the, specifically the way teams are going to be able to cover DeAndre Hopkins to have a Derrick Henry in that huddle with you. But a lot of that stuff, Denard, you're a guy who changed teams a couple times in your career. I mean, it comes down to money and opportunity, right? I mean, the rest of it just is stuff that makes you feel good. And by the time you get there, you're not going to walk into any situation thinking, well, geez, this team's terrible. I mean, you're going to look on the bright side of anything, even in this case, a couple of late season losses, right? You're going to look for the positives and say, hey, I can help that if as DeAndre Hopkins apparently has done.
Well, he's helped himself, and that's what matters at this point. Because if you look at it, the first thing, let's just be honest, John, you just alluded to the fact about the money. What a deal worth $26 million, $3 million per year available in incentives, not to mention a base salary of $12 million in 2023. That's not bad. That's not a bad way to go out. But I tell you what, I also love about the signing of D Hop is the fact that it's not just going to help Derrick Henry, it's also going to help Treylon Burks. I had a chance to, I saw a quote that I was reading earlier, David and John, and Treylon, man, he is excited about this the addition of D Hop, because what happens, he says that having D Hop in the building is motivating him to elevate his game and to take it to another level. And we talked about this receiving core, David. I mean, we talk about the youth. I mean, outside of Chris Moore, we looked at the ages. The oldest guy was Nick Westbrook-Ikhine going into his fourth year. So now what you have is a perimeter game where you have experience and depth by adding D-Hop. Not to mention, David, I wanted you to look at something. You look at this offensive line. It's a revamped offensive line in 2023. They went out. They address, especially look at the tackles position. You got Andre Big Man Dillard coming over from Green Bay. And then at the right tackle, we don't know if it's going to be Jamarcus Jones and Peter Skoronski. Now you've got a great running game. You've got a great receiver. You got a 1-2 punch. David, this is going to be excellent for D Hop in both ways. Monetary wise, you get paid. And now you get a chance to play with arguably the best back in the business, other than Nick Chubb and D Henry. So I love what a comment, David, was he mentioned Arian Foster, who he played with in Houston, but he says Derrick Henry is the best back that he's ever going to get a chance to play with in his career. And he feels like both of them can help each other in 2023 and elevate and take this thing to a Super Bowl.
And it's interesting to think about the impact on a Treylon Burks, right? I mean, it's one thing for Treylon Burks to have been through a rookie season in the NFL and to have had some big plays and a couple of really good games and to think, okay, that was good. I need to be better. I'm going to do things to make myself better. Now when you're in the building every day, in the meeting room, in the locker room, on the practice field, with a guy who's an eight-time Pro Bowler, a guy who has a guy who has done things that almost on a weekly basis at times that make people go, oh my goodness, absolutely. If you're Treylon Burks, you're going to be paying attention to that, and almost certainly, I mean, you can't say this for sure, but almost certainly at some point, Treylon Burks is going to think to himself, man, I thought I was working hard to get better, but looking at this guy, I've got so much more to do. And Hopkins talked about this a little bit too, and that, you know, when he came into the league, Houston had Andre Johnson, who was, you know, who showed him the ropes and taught him a lot of things to do. Then he went to Arizona, where Larry Fitzgerald, who I think played till he was what, 78 years old or something. You know, he sort of mentored Hopkins too in that regard. And, you know, it seems like he understands that it's not just I got to show up and play here. It's I got a bunch of young guys paying attention to me. I need to help them be better too. And that is a that if he can thrive in that role as well, that's got to be worth something. While we're talking about this Hopkins deal, we should note, because it was big news early in the offseason, that you know, Kevin Byard reworked his contract, basically turned some, I guess, guaranteed money or some actual money into incentive money that, you know, if all goes well, if he has a Kevin Byard type year, he's going to get his money. But that move was necessary to help get DeAndre Hopkins under contract. And Denard, I'll start with you on this. How likely is it that Byard said, I don't want to touch my contract, but oh, if you can get DeAndre Hopkins here, then yes, we can talk about that. You think it was as simple as that, or did this thing, any chance this thing built up into something more serious where they maybe franchise officials issued him an ultimatum?
I don't think they put up an ultimatum. The reason is if you look at his salary, he goes from making $14 million. So he'll take a $3 million hit this year. So you go from 14 to 11. And not to mention what KB can do. And this is, you got to give it up to Rand Carthon. I thought he did a great job. And even though he went to KB and said, listen, we need to restructure your contract, but what we're going to do, David, is we're going to put a bulk of that in incentives. So you can make make up a difference right there in just incentives alone. So even though you're going from a base of 11 million, let's say if Rand Carthon, I don't know how the contract looks, a lot of that can be made up in incentives. You know, we talk about interceptions, tackles, you know, whatever they put in there. So that's gonna be huge. But what I love about Kevin Byard, he is the most unselfish individual that I've had the chance to cover in a long time. David, he said it best. He said, it's all about winning ball games. And when he was asked regarding his deal, and what I love about it is there was this guy, I don't know, David, you may know him. His name is John Glennon from the Nashville Post. And I was reading an article. I don't know who this guy is, but yes. He was interviewing, I guess, Kevin Byard about this. And what an interesting quote. And he's quoted, it says, at times it's time to be selfish, but at the end of the day, it's about building a team. And I am a team leader, and I want to win first and foremost. David, that says it all. And that's why I'm glad they got this deal done.
You know, John, everyday people will look at this and say, okay, 14 million to 11 million, you know, what's the difference, right? I mean, that's a 11 million's a lot of money. 14 million's a lot of money. You know, how hard is your scent? How hard do you think Kevin Byard thought about this? How difficult a decision was this for him? And you know, as you've written about, like, what ultimately made him comfortable with this move, you think?
Yeah, you know, I think sort of the shock a little bit probably wore off for Kevin Byard. You know, I think one of the comments he made, you know, I honestly can't remember whether he was talking to the national media, whether he was talking, he did the podcast Bussin' on the Boys. But he said, you know, initially this whole thing started about the pay cut. He had his agent go to the Titans, and he was looking for an extension, you know, at that point. And the Titans kind of countered with, not so much on the extension front, but hey, how about a pay cut, you know, while we're talking? So
that's a big difference.
That's a little gut punch right there. And especially, you know, when Kevin Byard is a guy who had already restructured his contract twice previously. He was also dealing with a brand new general manager in Rand Carthon. So you could see where where feelings got hurt and things got out of whack here. But what really helps, David, you mentioned it's only a $3 million salary cut. But what really helps is the restructuring here for the Titans. How the magic of the salary cap. The Titans are Kevin Byard's salary cap hit dropped from 19.6 to 11.3 this year. So that gave the Titans $8 million more in cap money this year. That's what brought in DeAndre Hopkins. So yeah, I think that certainly, played a significant role in Kevin Byard's decision. But what was not on Kevin Byard's contract previously and is now is a $4 million roster bonus for next year, which I believe kicks in March. So basically, what that does is if assuming the Titans don't cut Kevin Byard in the lead up to free agency, which would be stunning at this point for that to happen, then he's going to make that money back. I think in that $4 million signing bonus, or not signing, but $4 million roster bonus next year. So it's in some ways it's a win-win. But yeah, just the willingness for Kevin Byard to work on this. And Ryan Tannehill put it pretty well today. He said that kind of thing has a huge impact in the locker room when one of your team leaders, is willing to sacrifice somewhat and just to work with the team like that in order to bring in a star player, very uplifting for the locker room in general.
And at this point, we probably should invoke a name that we don't bring up very often in discussions like this, but it should not be overlooked. Vice President of Football Administration Vin Marino is the Titans salary cap guru and probably is the one who said, "Hey, here's what we can do. Here's a way we can free up a lot of money." And in fact, the Titans executives earlier this week in meeting with the media, assistant GM Chad Brinker talked about Vin Marino and said, he said, "I really trust him. He's a guy that knows the cap inside and out. Probably forgotten more about the cap than even I know." And these are the kind of thing. It's one thing to make moves to get you under the salary cap because a lot of teams have to do them. It's another thing to do it without crippling yourself at some point. You think back to the history of this team when Floyd Reese, rest his soul, did whatever he could to keep the core of that Super Bowl team together as long as he possibly could. And then all of a sudden you find yourself in these situations where Randall Godfrey agrees to take a pay cut in February, and then a couple months later, you release him anyway. Where Steve McNair is told he can't work out in the building because you're not going to be able to keep him on the roster. You got to make a move, and he ends up in Baltimore. Your most hated opponent, and Samari Roll goes to Baltimore, and Derek Mason goes to Baltimore, and you haven't seen those kinds of situations repeat themselves in the last decade or so. And Vin Marino has been the guy making those kinds of decisions for quite a while now. And you have to give him credit for, yes, there have been guys that the Titans haven't been able to re-sign, but there just has not been the sort of mass exodus that we had seen earlier in this franchise's time in Tennessee. So salute to Vin Marino for his ingenuity in getting this deal done. We mentioned the George Fant workout. Denard, you referenced it a short time ago. You brought up the name Jamarco Jones. Mike Vrabel was asked about the right tackle position and what's going to happen. Reminder, of course, Nicholas Petit-Frere is going to have to miss the first six games of the season for an NFL suspension related to violation of the gambling policy. John, it sounds like Jamarco Jones is going to be the guy who gets the first opportunity, certainly to be the right tackle. Is that the way you read it?
Is where the kind of the tea leaves are pointing right now. If George Fant isn't signed, I did just notice just before we start our podcast tonight that he has George Fant just actually reportedly worked out for the Houston Texans as well. No signing there either yet, but another AFC South team that is at least interested in George Fant. And we should also mention on the George Fant front, kind of a weird situation. You know, he worked out Saturday for the team. We know that, and that was reported. And then, oddly enough, when veterans reported on Tuesday, you know, George Fant, who hadn't been signed, you know, the Titans photographer, team photographer, is snapping pictures of guys walking into the facility from the parking lot. And lo and behold, who's one of the guys he snaps a picture of? But George Fant. You know, and that goes up on the Titans photo gallery. And all of a sudden, people start noticing this, and it starts making the rounds. And all of a sudden, whoops, the Titans pull that down from their, from the photo gallery on the team site. So kind of a weird situation there. But I still think, in my mind, I think Fant, you know, if something can be worked out monetarily, if Fant is healthy enough, I know he had knee problems last year, but I just think that is the best option right now. You know, Jamarco Jones, they like his versatility, but you look at the amount of right tackle snaps. I think 85 career snaps over 3 seasons at right tackle. One of them was a start. It's not a lot. And then, you know, Mike Vrabel also went down the list of other guys who might, you know, kind of compete if it's not Jamarco Jones and if they don't sign George Fant. And he, you know, rattled off several names who've never played an NFL down. You know, Andrew Rupchich, John LeGlue, Jalen Duncan, John Ojukwu, who they call OJ. You know, the thought of anybody starting out of those guys who never even played, you know, in an NFL game is kind of nuts. And then he didn't even rule out the possibility either of Skoronski, who's already learning 2 positions on the left, moving over to right tackle potentially, or Brunskill moving from right guard to right tackle. So there's still a lot of possibilities. But yeah, you're right that Jamarco Jones seems to be the guy right now. And I just I don't know. I you know. It's a tough situation for the Titans. There's no perfect solution, but I would have my concerns if he's your starting right tackle in week one.
And if you're asking who is Jamarco Jones, we'll remind you that the Titans signed him last year as a free agent with the idea that he would compete for the starting job at left guard and or right tackle. And the feeling when they signed him was, you know, he's coming here to play more likely than not. And if not, then he's going to be their primary backup, probably, you know, possibly at 4 positions, really. And what happened was he just was never healthy, like never even in training camp got going. And it was a completely lost year. And so Denard, I want to ask you, for a guy like that who comes to a new team and just can't be healthy, can't get on the field, practice field, game field, otherwise, you know, how motivated do you suspect he will be by this opportunity, and presuming he, you know, he's the guy getting first team reps at right tackle right out of the gate here?
Well, it means everything to a player of his caliber. You got to understand, he missed his entire rookie season because of injuries, David. And so right now, he knows that in what he's only appeared in 36 games with 7 starts. So sometimes you're talking about the window of opportunity closing. If you can't stay healthy in this league, they will make changes quickly. And I think that's why we've been hearing so much of George Fant. Now, one of the things I do love about Jamarco is when he is healthy. He's a very good player. I think he's great at that tackle position. As you look at the way he played when he was with Seattle, I mean, how many players do you know that in 7 starts in 36 games, you know, you look at the with right guard, he made 3 starts, right tackle 2, left guard 1 game, left tackle 1 start. I mean, that's versatility. I mean, you know that what that's his at strongest attribute is that you know that you can move him, what, 5, 4 or 5 positions on the offensive line. That's why I give Jamarco kind of a heads up. I give him kind of a little bit of edge over George Fant if they did sign George Fant, in the fact that he can play multiple positions. But again, David, that's his Achilles heel is his health. And that's always been an issue. So if he can't stay healthy, I don't know what you're going to be able to do with him.
And say this too, he's a guy I mean, I know coaches try not to play favorites, and some I'm sure are more successful than others. But this is a guy Mike Vrabel has known going back to Vrabel's
Oh.
days coaching, at Ohio State, and he talked about, I watched him play basketball. I got to know his mom. I mean, there's a part of Mike Vrabel that's rooting for this guy right now. Not just the head coach saying, okay, if this guy can make us a good offensive line, great. I mean, there's got to be that part of him that's just saying, I like this guy. He deserves this opportunity. I hope he can make the most of it. So he is, training camps typically don't have nearly as much intrigue as they did 25, 30 years ago. You sort of come into training camp knowing what a roster is going to look like, barring injuries and unexpected developments, that sort of thing. But Jamarco Jones is one of those guys who is really going to be worth watching in the early part of training camp, and particularly the preseason games, because as we said, he's a guy who could potentially come back from the abyss here and have a very, very important role for this team. And speaking of important roles, there's obviously none more important than quarterback. And the Titans know who their starting quarterback is, but beyond that, things get a little more interesting. And for what it's worth, we heard a little bit of this during the offseason. Mike Vrabel again on the opening day of camp raving about Malik Willis and his attitude, and referenced a Nick Saban quote where saying, good players want to be left alone, great or excuse me, average players want to be left alone, good players want to be coached, and great players want to be told the truth. And he went on to basically explain that Malik Willis accepted some difficult truths about his rookie season in terms of his dealings with the coaches and whatnot this off season. So John, agree with me, disagree with me here. What do you think? It's nice for him to say all that, but you think back to last preseason and it was all about Malik Willis and trying to get Malik Willis ready to be the number two quarterback and getting him as many snaps as possible for the most part. I think what we see in the preseason games this year in terms of the division of labor between Willis and
Levis.
Oh my God, help me.
Will Levis.
Will Levis. Good grief. That name just went out of my head. And Will Levis will speak volumes. I mean, it will either be Will Levis getting the same treatment that Willis did last year, or we're going to see some kind of actual competition. Don't you think that's where we're really going to know what the coaching staff is thinking about Malik Willis?
Yeah, I think so. But I do think also that they are quite pleased with what, the improvement they've seen in Malik Willis. Not only the quote that you mentioned today, that Mike Vrabel was using the Nick Saban comment, but, even yesterday when Mike Vrabel was kind of previewing training camp, and the words he used, a little bit unusual, but still praiseworthy for Malik Willis. He said, Malik came out of the spring, the offseason, with glaring improvement. Which is a little unusual, like I say, but certainly, he's pumping up Malik, whereas, that certainly was not the case, last year, nearly as much. And to me, I'm a little bit more open to the thought now that they could keep those three quarterbacks. I think after the draft, for me, I thought, judging from what we saw from Malik Willis last year, I thought it was going to be a two quarterback team and Malik Willis was really going to have an issue staying on the roster. And that still may be the case because we know they're not going to cut Levis after being drafted in the second round last year. But I now think it's more possible that they keep three, if Malik Willis continues to sort of rise this ascendancy here, if he shows that he is simply too good to cut, that he shows signs of being a future starter, You know, whether that's here or whether he's good enough that the Titans could trade him if they like Levis also, you know, then the Titans really have no choice but to keep him. You don't move on from a guy who could be a potential starting quarterback, plain and simple. So it depends on how, you know, Malik plays the rest of training camp in the preseason games. But I'm a little bit more inclined to think that three quarterback option is a possibility, especially if the Titans are, you know, not dealing with injuries, a lot of injuries, or if they're not real needy at various positions. I'm leaning a little bit more towards the three quarterback situation than I was before.
Denard, Malik Willis is hardly unique in the NFL in terms of being a guy who's been a star pretty much everywhere he's been coming up through the ranks. High school, yes, things didn't go the way he wanted at Auburn, but did things at Liberty University no one could have expected. And then all of a sudden you get to the NFL and you're not the greatest thing anymore. And you learn that you have to work, and you hear the types of comments from coaches that you've probably never heard or rarely heard throughout your life at this point. So, you know, what does it say? Like, I guess, number one, how hard is that for guys to adjust to that, to sort of be like, oh, I'm not one of the best just by showing up? And two, what does it tell you about Malik Willis that apparently he took all of that the proper way this offseason?
Well, first of all, when you are a rookie, and there's no such thing as a pass, but your first year, I don't care what position, typically rookies struggle their first year in the league. I don't care if you have a guy coming in at the left tackle position, your right tackle. But when you look at the quarterback position, David, it's the hardest job to try to master your first year. And I don't care, Dave, you can go down the line. And what gives me hope with Malik Willis is the fact that look at some of the names. And I'm just going to give out a few names, David. I love some of these names. John Elway, to me, is one of the greatest quarterbacks to play this game. But when his first year in Denver, he had an abysmal year. I mean, look at his numbers. What was he? 7-4 TD-wise, 7 TDs, 14 interceptions. He had a 4-6 record. I don't think that's very good for the number one pick in the 83 draft. Do you think so?
No, it was rough.
It was rough. Are you rough? And not to mention, I love Eli Manning. One of the best to play. I think he's definitely a first ballot. I hope he's going to go in the Hall of Fame pretty soon. Had a great career, won 2 Super Bowls. But what was his, 6 TDs, 9 interceptions, and he had a, 1-6 record as a starter for the Giants. That's not very good for the number one pick out of Ole Miss, right?
Yeah, but
– What about go ahead, David.
No, go ahead, John.
Goes on and on.
Yeah, exactly. I was just I can think being a young Cowboys fan back in the day, I certainly remember – Troy Aikman, you know, being a number one pick and just having a really, really awful year. And the entire Cowboys team was awful. And, of course, things turned around dramatically. Yeah.
Nine touchdowns and 18 interceptions, and he was 0-11. This was the number one pick in 88 out of UCLA. David, that's unacceptable here in Dallas, but that was a rookie. So do you not think that we kind of give him a little pass?
I was working in Dallas at the time. I remember that well. But you know, the one notable difference is all those guys sort of got thrown in head first. Whereas Willis was held out most of the year, and particularly held out when they needed him. I'm sure it was humbling to him, you know, and he's kind of a humble guy to begin with, and he sort of showed last year a sort of nice demeanor about himself, but it couldn't, it's not one of those things where he was thinking, okay, you know, I went through this, I went through that, I went through that, you know, I'm not going to make those mistakes in games again. You know, this was a guy who had to sit there and watch, and a guy who had to, you know, the last couple games watch Josh Dobbs come off the street and take, you know, the job that he had been prepped for all year. So it's a little different in terms of psychologically, I think, what Malik Willis has to overcome in his second year. But you know, it like to John's point, if he can do enough to convince coaches and franchise officials here to keep three quarterbacks on the roster, then he becomes an exciting option in terms of, at the very least, what kind of specific personnel packages and play packages can you put in for him and sort of change the pace of the game, get him some experience, build some confidence that way?
David, I had a chance. Andre Ware, the former Heisman Trophy winner, back in, was that 1990, I believe, out of Houston. I had a chance to. I heard he made a comment about the quarterback position because Andre was a number one pick for the Detroit Lions, and he struggled his whole career in Detroit. And Andre and I worked out with him out in Houston. One of the things he alluded to was that you cannot play fast as a quarterback until you master that playbook. Until you get that playbook down, you make these moves or you're indecisive. And that's the only way that you can make it in this league. That's why you see quarterbacks that work through, we call it embrace the process. When you work through those pains, it's typically when you get that playbook down. Now you can play fast, but until Will Levis and both Malik, who's still a rookie, until they get the quarterback that playbook down of Tim Kelly's, you're gonna continue to see see those kind of mistakes.
Well, that'll be another interesting part of the preseason, perhaps the most interesting part of the preseason. But as always, our time here goes fast, and that'll do it for this episode of Believe in Titans. Denard Walker, thanks as always.
Thank you, David and John.
John Glennon, thank you.
Okay, thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
And we thank you all out there for listening. As always, again, this is the Believe in Titans podcast.